if you used less of those plastic, less of the metal strips, wider spacing, you would get a higher voltage but less current, because each individual one is discharging a certain number of coulombs, if you know what I mean. So the real way to make the machine give higher voltage is to build a larger diameter disc, which I have started doing but haven't completed that project. And you got to be careful. The way those machines are designed, with about an 8 or a 9 inch diameter disc, is such that you can build up just enough voltage on the Leyden jars that are there. You can store just enough charge. Let me drop. That the machine is right at the threshold of being safe for a human being. The total number of joules of high voltage that you discharge between the left hand and the right hand of a human being, as you exceed a certain number of joules, you're either defibrillating or fibrillating the person, if you know what I mean, if you happen to do it during the wrong timing of that particular person's heart. There's a very critical time in the way the heart works between the RST wave that if you hit a spike of voltage at the wrong time, your timing mechanism of your heart goes crazy and you start going into fibrillation, and then you have to be defibrillated. In other words, there's too many pulses going around the ring of the timing mechanism of your heart, and if the heart tries to beat too rapidly, it ends up moving no real fluid, and it's as if you're not having any heartbeat at all, even though you may be beating a 200 times per minute, if you know what I mean. So you got to worry about that. When you build a larger Wimshurst machine, you got to be very careful that you're not in the middle of that spark, if you know what I mean. But the fact that I could get a larger spark is kind of an interesting experiment. Now, I'm about to give you an explanation for why does air pressure do that. Let me drop. Without a doubt, when you get an arc in air, you are discharging in between the individual air molecules. You've accelerated some electrons. They move fast enough. They've hit the next air molecule with enough velocity that they ionize the next air molecule. They boil off some of those electrons, which starts the avalanche process that you and I call either a corona discharge or an arc. When you pack air molecules in tighter, and the air molecules are closer together, at first you would think they're going to arc over at a lower voltage. Uh-uh. What really happens is that even if there is a free electron in that soup of air molecules, because the air molecules are now so close together, because you've got a higher air pressure in there, they're going to encounter the next air molecule so soon that in that particular E-field, there's a certain finite amount of acceleration taking place. The individual electron did not get a chance to build up a high enough velocity that when it strikes the next air molecule, it can ionize it. That's the explanation for why, as you go to higher and higher altitude, at lower and lower air pressure, where the air molecules are further and further apart, the breakdown of air happens at a lower and lower voltage. The dielectric strength of air goes to a lower number with higher altitude or lower air pressure because of the greater spacing between the molecules. That's the so-called Passion curve. Mr. Passion, I guess in the late 1800s, did a whole lot of experiments of the breakdown of air versus air pressure. And so this patent on the so-called space telegraph is using that technique. I wonder how well they understood why higher air pressure gave them a higher dielectric strength. I wonder if they really understood that on this particular patent, which was October 24th, 1911. The guy filed for the patent, I think it was in 1904, and it was granted in 1911. It took them...
Repeater, timeout, cancel.
It was because the law was changing, because of the influence of the big guy, J.P. Morgan, from Chase Manhattan Bank. They changed the law, which stands that all of the machines that seems to be not following the laws of conservation energy, not supposed to be patented, but this guy took them to court, and that's why he was able, after 10 years, to get the patent.
But by my standards, Wes, this patent is a kind of a transmitter where you don't need a LIPA or a Con Ed giving you high voltage in a step-up transformer in order to develop the spark arc in order to operate the transmitter. This thing, you run a small motor that turns the crank, that moves these Wimshurst machine discs, that generates the high voltage, that does the transmitting. Now, I'll admit that to make this machine into a 100 kilowatt transmitter, I think would be kind of difficult. But even so, I think this can be a very effective transmitter. But this is a transmitter, not any kind of machine that's trying to exceed conservation of energy. So I'm having a little trouble understanding why this particular patent was delayed in the patent office. How could J.P. Morgan delay that particular one or advance it? Why was there a delay, if you understood why it was N2XJN, K2LIW?
Well, the story is very controversial. First, I have to give you a few words. Dr. Peter Liederman and Eric Dollard, when I sent you another video about Tesla Longitudinal Energy when they were young boys, he stated about the facts that were first stated by Nikola Tesla, that when you create a voltage 1000 volts per millimeter, you create a tunnel in which longitudinal waves could actually go through. And that's why I asked you, I sent you that video to review it again, although we spoke about it. Let me drop. The effects from that generator of the French guy were so much controversial at that time that they have had a very hard time to approve that. Dr. Judy Wood visited John Hutchison, the Canadian, who was playing with the transmutation. This guy started to play with transmutation in 1980. In 1983, he had, based on his words, a visitor for 4 months from the Pentagon. Dr. Judy Wood pointed at her video at this particular patent as the basis for Hutchison to work on his technology. She said that she was at his place, and in his living room she was able to see the transmutation taking place. Now, the official paper that was presented from the Fort Mammoth in New Jersey sending about transmutation of the metal in the presence of two frequencies, 555 megahertz and 500, I don't remember that. Is following actually the time of 1983 when John Hutchison had a visitor. Document was released to the public in 2001, if I remember correctly. Now, based on her suggestion, Hutchison got his effects from that particular device because he was able to achieve more than 1,000 volts per millimeter. And then she leaded those findings to the similar effects found in the towers. And to Exia.
Okay, you said 1980 on a number of occasions, and we're talking now about a Wimshurst-like machine on a so-called space telegraph. I wonder if we're mixing subjects. I'm a little bit confused.
Pretty easy to understand. In 1911, the patent was patented after 10 years of waiting. And then in 1980, John Hutchison started to work on transmutation. In 1983, based on his words, John had the visitors from Pentagon. In 1989, Army was very much progressing Fort Mammoth in transmutation experiments of the metal, and they were able to achieve the effect. And then in 2001, if I remember correctly, the findings were released to the public, declassified. Dr. Judy Wood states that she visited John Hutchison and she pointed on her video on that particular patent saying this technology was known already in 1911. I have seen by my own eyes that John Hutchison was able to provide the transmutation in front of my eyes. Then she led to the very much tragedy as the similar effect that occurs in the towers and to X-ray.
John, KC2WGB, make some comments. Go over you, John.
KC2WGB, well, it wasn't kind of like my comment. I find no thread in what Dr. Judy Woods said, indicated, or in her speeches, which I've heard them all, John Hutchinson's work, and this machine from 1911. John Hutchinson was dealing with two frequencies. This basically is a spark generator. Okay, if transmutation, John Hutchinson and the Army destroyed steel beams with some kind of very low power dual frequencies, how does that connect in any stretch of the imagination to this Wimhurst machine? I've discussed this all week with Wesley. There is no opening for me to follow. I don't understand the relationship. This is a tough one, Dick. So maybe he can give you more information, but it's something I have not seen with my own eyes. I've seen videos. Is it transmutation? I don't know. They claim it is. But, Dick, you know what that's like. There's nothing there. KC2WGB.
Let me make a comment on it. John.
Let Dick finish.
Yeah, I'm a bit confused. Maybe Wes can add a couple of words. Go ahead, Wes, and wait for the beep.
Thank you, Xian. John, remember when I asked you, could you please review Dr. Judy Wood video? And I'm going to point you at that particular place. And could you just, for me, verify if I see it right or if I see it wrong? Because based on that video, in front of your eyes, you see the metal actually turning into the dust in vertical columns. So I just ask. I'm not making any statement in here. There is zero statement in my discussion with you guys. So he refused to do it. I'm not going to go to it. Then I said, well, this is what she's pointing at. This is her word. This is what she says. She saw the experiment of John Hutchinson transmutating the materials in front of her eyes.
The word transmutation in this case means that some kind of a field or a signal or whatever is applied to a steel beam, and the steel beam turns into powder. Is that what we're talking about, Wes? Go ahead.
Well, John would be able to. He's got these images. He would be able to actually tell you about how the transmutation effect looked like based on the artifacts of John Hutchinson. John?
Dick, it's difficult for me to support this because I refuse to watch the videos again because I watched them like three times. I saw everything he was talking about. The fact that she's pointing to a document saying this is the thing, I saw that. Okay, she is pointing to it. What is her connection? She doesn't tell you that. Now, the fact that you see dust, I'm sorry, I was there. The Trade Center, yeah, there was a lot of dust. Yeah, there was a lot of damaged metal. Transmutation? I don't know if that's what happened. It's very convoluted and very nebulous, and I don't see a clear, exact way of connecting it the way Wesley is doing. You know, I know he has his own things in his mind, but I don't see it that way. Over to you, Dick. Maybe you have some questions that will open up some answers.
Yeah, the World Trade Center, the majority of the mass of the World Trade Center was, by my standards, dead concrete that was poured a foot and a half thick on each floor, an acre of concrete, foot and a half thick on each floor. I forget what the exact number is, but I think it's 1.5 million pounds of concrete are on each floor. Each one of those buildings had something in the vicinity of 500 million pounds of concrete, and the majority of that concrete was, an awful lot of the concrete was 1,300 feet in the air. The sheer amount of energy of all of those motors and all of those cranes for all of those years hauling all of that material against gravity up to the altitude to install it into that building. When all of that huge amount of mass, roughly 500 million pounds of concrete at that altitude, comes crashing down, That will pulverize anything. That's the world's biggest battering ram on planet Earth that nothing but a really big meteorite, a 10-Gusker event, can come close to that, if you know what I mean. The fact that that amount of concrete crashing down all of that distance, dissipating all of those megajoules and gigajoules and terajoules of energy, the fact that it created a whole lot of dust and powder that went running up and down those streets and was choking the people and coating their clothing and everything else, there's more than enough sheer energy of crushing all of that concrete to do all kinds of damage. To say that somebody was transmuting the metal of the building and that's why it came down, that's a tough one to support.
I got more information for you, Dick.
Go right ahead, John.
Wesley can explain what he means, but this is what I was told by Wesley, that they timed the building and it fell faster than it should. Now, you explain to me how that is possible.
Well, let me take a stance, guys.
Like Dick answer the question.
I just recorded the question. The free fall of the stone dropped from the top of the building takes approximately 8.5 seconds. The building collapsed 3 seconds further. The whole building, end to end.
32 feet per second per second. That's a fixed rate, isn't it, Dick?
Yeah. 1/2 AT squared, you solve that for T. What's the length of time the building should collapse? I vaguely remember doing the calculation at 9.5 seconds for something on the top of the building. If you're talking about completely free fall with no air resistance and no resistance of anything else below it interfering with it temporarily as the building is collapsing in peculiar stages.
But in no case it can speed up, correct?
Yeah. By what technique could you say that the top of the building fell too fast? Did somebody do an accurate timing, and did the top of the building hit the ground at less than the right number of seconds? Is that what we're saying? Over to you, John.
Yes, Dick, that's what Wesley's claiming. Now, let him explain why he thinks that's true. I don't see how that could happen, but who knows? Dick, back to you, and then pass to Wes.
Yeah, I assume the building is roughly 1,300 feet high, so if the top of the building had completely free fall with no wind resistance and no resistance from anything else below it striking it as that particle was falling. However, I believe the stuff is going to exceed 120 miles an hour. Many things when they free fall, because of wind resistance, don't go beyond 120 miles an hour. So you're going to get some extra delay in there. Did somebody look at the video and say that the top of the building fell in less than the right number of seconds? Is that the claim? In which case, that would be a bit difficult to support. Over to you, John West, N2XJN, K2RIW.
First, I want to straight out something. I don't say that I believe in it, and I don't make any statements. I'm just asking the questions, the same way as Dr. Judy Wood did. She is a structural engineer, and she is a PhD. And she made the calculation, and she made the proof of data. And based on the evidence presented, the building collapsed faster than it would be the free fall. That's one of the things. In her video that John refused to see, you see what she says is happening. The vertical beams in front of your eyes turn into the dust in plenty of frames. That's what is happening. Now, all of the story that I gave you is not that I believe it's happening, is that what she is pointing at. But Dr. Judy Wood, when she was suing government of the United States in 2007, she did make any statement. She just asked the questions. And to it,
a good question, Dick.
Go ahead, John.
I'm sure you remember the photographs and the films and the tapes and whatever. The amount of dust that was being emanated, it's difficult to tell. Is that the fire material coming off of a piece of steel? Or is it dustification of the steel? How can she make that statement? And to make a statement that it's falling faster than it should have sounds insane to me. And Wesley, stop making disclaimers. I know you're only reporting what she's questioning. I know that. So you don't have to keep clarifying that. Dick, back to you.
Okay, I'm still doing this calculation. I'll be with you in a minute. Go ahead, Wes.
That's why it's important I can send you the video so you can review the video and you can go over the her statement and eventually judge for yourself. I'm not judging, I'm asking. Yeah, no, I have to clarify myself. There are plenty of people who would like just for me to make any statement. Anyhow, let me drop.
By the way, 1,300 feet at 1/2 AT squared, if there was no wind resistance, would be 8.98, let's call it 9 seconds. A skosh under 9 seconds should be the portion of the building 1,300 feet above the ground, striking the ground, if it was pure free fall in a vacuum, if you know what I mean. So, did anybody claim that a portion of the top of the building reached the ground in less than 9 seconds?
Judy Wood, she gives the exact data and calculation for that, and she's supporting with the seismic data, with the videos, with the any kind of physical evidence, and to experience.
But in the case of seismic data, and you're getting all kinds of booms and bumps and everything else in the seismic data, is that the top of the building hitting, the bottom of the building hitting? Is it a portion of the other building? It's very hard to tell. The only thing that I would trust is a video camera that is well-timed, and you watch the top of the building go all the way down to the ground, and you time how long that takes. That I would accept. Other than that, when it comes to seismic data, you got the middle of the building hitting, the 22nd floor hitting, and so on. I don't know how in the world you can decide that.
The Dick, she was giving all of these answers for all of these questions that you're asking for.
Okay, what was she claiming? That 9 seconds is the right time and it hit in 7 seconds? Is that what she was saying?
She didn't make any claim. She made a calculation. She said it that based on the available data, the building collapsed faster than would be the free fall. And apart from that, there was no collapse. There was justification in practice. That's why you had so little debris. And when you're in a crime scene, first what you do is you analyze what's going on. You're not sending the metal to China and to Exia.
I know that after the 9/11 event, all kinds of conspiracy claims were being made, that there were bombs in the building and all kinds of things like this. But did somebody look at that debris at Ground Zero and say there was too little debris? Did somebody actually say those words?
It couldn't. 24 hours after that, plenty of the debris was already in the process of removal. So that the removal was very well organized, and it was sent to undisclosed location. And then the information based on what I was able to read, I don't know if it's true, the material was from this water center was sent to China for the processing. When you have a crime, you don't touch it. Of course, you dig for the people. Another statement of her was, from all of the parts of the bodies that was found, was only one hand. And to Exia.
I've talked to some personal friends who were at Ground Zero for some number of days. And unfortunately, some of those people were not wearing the right kind of respiratory protection devices. And they've suffered some side effects because of that. But when that much huge amount of weight is crushing down on automobiles that were in the basement and human beings and whatever, my friend was describing what it was like to look at that debris. You would peel away some of the debris and say, I think that was an automobile. Yeah, I recognize that as sort of the rim of a wheel, and I think I see a drive shaft, and I think I see a differential. I mean, everything was so crushed and mixed up in all kinds of crazy ways, then subjected to fire that lasted for a whole lot of days. The fact that the stuff was hard to analyze after that big an event, I mean, when it comes to the pure amount of energy being dissipated, I'll bet you this is a good fraction of an atomic bomb as far as the total number of joules of energy, just that it didn't have the million degrees Fahrenheit or centigrade that comes out of an atomic bomb, maybe at 10 million degrees. It didn't have that component, and it didn't have the gamma rays, but it's certain, and the high velocity neutrons and the Compton electrons, it didn't have that. But when it comes to pure mechanical energy due to gravity, wow. I mean, it took years to haul all of that stuff up to that altitude, and you got all of that back in 9 seconds. It took years of 1,000 horsepower engines hauling things up for years, and you got that all back in 9 seconds. That's a lot of energy in a hurry.
Hey Glenn, Dick, could you explain why in FDR you had hundreds of cars that were partially burned? Some of them, based on the picture, didn't have an engine, but part of the vehicle had the paint on it. So the engine disappeared, but the paint was on it. Also, the rubber tires were intact. And to exit.
KC2QIQ with comment.
Yeah, because this, not all pluses, not all portions got hot. Lots of portions got crushed. But I could take an automobile, I could put it into the biggest crushing machine that mankind has ever created. And then
yeah, but there was a mile away, Dick, mile away. You have hundreds of cars damaged this way, mile away from where the impact was.
Yeah, that I hadn't heard. Glenn, go ahead. Wait for the beep, sir, Glenn.
Yeah, there's been a lot of studies on the exact failure mechanisms and the heat and the fire and the jet fuel. The planes were basically fully loaded from Boston when they actually did contact and make direct hit into the building, into both buildings for that matter. And because they were both completely filled, if you look at the actual photos of some of the impact, the wings really folded right into the building, and basically all that fuel dripped right through the center shafts. And there were even the areas of the building that would normally be used for evacuation. The fuel just dripped all the way through. And what actually brought the building down wasn't even the plane itself. It was the heat from all that fuel burning basically softened and melted the steel enough to a point to where the floors just collapsed. So, and then on top of that, I believe it was almost a month before the burning, and in many, many floors down. So all that stuff collapsed down, and it was burning below the subway level. K2RW, KC2QIQ.
With thermite.
Without a doubt, there's a tremendous amount of fuel and fire at the time of impact for the next few minutes. And then the fuel itself was burning a hell of a lot of flammable materials in that building. That building, I wouldn't be a bit surprised to find there was 50 tons of paper and wooden desks and wooden chairs and whatever. There's a hell of a lot of flammable materials in that building and no remaining fire extinguisher system left.
The only problem is that paper was not burned. On all of the videos, you don't see paper burned. Not at all. Try to find one single piece of paper that was burned. Enter it here.
Because it was incinerated.
Thermite.
An awful lot of that fire was the flammable materials in that building. The jet fuel initiated the process, without a doubt. But there's a lot of the flammable materials in that building. The chunks of paper that flew out the window that got free of the blast. Yeah, you saw unburned pieces of paper. And now, when it comes to the burning that took place before the building collapsed, I can see how a lot of flammable materials supporting that fire, making a hell of a lot of hot fire, weakening the steel. The steel, the tremendous amounts of concrete it's trying to support on each and every floor, sagged. And as long as one single floor collapses into the next floor below it, it starts a pancaking runaway action, and after that the whole darn building collapses.
Well, but you don't see the pancake. There is no pancake over there. It's just a fortification.
When stuff is falling that far and dissipating that amount of energy, you're no longer going to recognize individual pancake layers anymore. And whatever burning took place, you're going to scatter with all of that concrete dust, you're going to scatter all of those ashes. If I took a burning piece of paper and now I crush it under a whole lot of pulverized concrete, you're no longer going to be able to recognize the paper, the portion that was burned, or the ashes. All of that evidence is pulverized, I think. What do you think, Glenn? KC2QIQ, K2IW?
Yeah, it was a mess there, Dick. I had seen, you know, been a witness there, you know, about 2 days afterwards, and what actually happened in that area, I mean, it was dust for blocks after that. I mean, it was just a cloud. I've seen videos even of the day, and basically it was just a running cloud from those buildings coming down and burning and then collapsing, and it was just absolutely horrible, a horrible situation for people who were even blocks away from the... you know, from the scene, and just the general terror that it caused in the city that day. It shut down everything. They shut off the bridges. There was no more mass transportation. The whole subway system on the southern half of the city, you know, you don't hear about this too much. You know, everybody always hears about the Twin Towers, but what about the whole subway system in that whole area that just got completely trashed? It took them years just to rebuild the subway system in that end of the city, Vic. It's an absolute total disaster. K2RIW, KC2QIQ.
Now, part of what's going on here, as I see it, Wes, John, Glenn, and others, is that we've never had an event with that much kinetic energy, potential energy, being dissipated in roughly nine seconds. When that building collapsed, 90% of all that energy of just the mass and altitude crushing down in roughly 9 seconds. We've never had anything like that amount of energy of that kind of material in that short a period of time. We've got no past history to know what we're looking at is reasonable or unreasonable. There are all kinds of terrorist theories of people who are saying, yeah, there were bombs planted in the building. That's pretty hard to support. I mean, I see mechanisms by which the aircraft that crashed into those buildings could have done all that. Is that an absolute open and shut case? Of course not. We're going to be talking about that and the Kennedy assassination for the rest of our lives. We'll never get completely to the bottom of every one of the details. I'm reasonably satisfied, though, that those aircraft initiated that event. And for people to think that something else was going on at the same time that's not easy to support is my opinion. K2RIW listening. I don't know who gets it. Go ahead, Wes.
I'm not supporting it. I see the material as I see anything else. I prepared another set of the material which we may not probably be able to go to, that I have sent, completely scientific. I discussed that. I just stand at the point that Glenn is a master in his science, and Dr. Judy Wood is a master in her science. Let me jump. As a structural engineer, and she calculated that the amount of the debris that was left is one-third of what's supposed to be. Then when she pointed at the structure of the collapse at her video exactly, she not only pointed at the justification of the vertical beams which supposed to remain, but she also points at how that collapse happened. You basically see only dust. So she states that it must be the difference of the vector of the force from the vectoral vertical columns that were able to withstand the wind of 3 to 5 feet at the top of it from the wind. So what she says is that it is kind of strange that two planes could collapse that. Now, from the other hand, all of the video that you see, even very close capture, when the second plane hits the tower, for some reason there is discontinuity on all these videos. Some of them are so close that you see the people, and there's that tragedy that happened when the people will simply go down. But what she points also that three floors beat the point where the plane hit, you see the people. So this amount of energy and the amount of temperature that is there is really melting the cell and having all of this impact. Why do you see the people? 3, 5 floors below, 7 floors below, and look at the time from the impact to the time of the collapse. Enter X-ray.
Yeah, from the impact of the airplane until the building collapsed, you've got a significant amount of time in order for the heating process to heat up the steel, to weaken the steel, to start the bending process, which eventually created a failure of at least 1 or 2 floors.
And you see the light people just hanging on the windows by that whole time. And to X-ray.
Okay. People experiencing a hell of a lot of heat inside the building and hanging outside the windows. What part of that is strange to you, Wes? Go ahead.
Well, I have to send you the material so you could see. You see the people hanging on it, and now the temperature inside must be of the one that is melting the steel. Okay, the temperature to melt the steel is about 2,000, 2,500 Celsius, not the Fahrenheit. So, and then take a simple calculation about the thickness of the steel structure. So, if the melting was taking place, and then you see that the domino effect over there, that must be a significant fire throughout the building.
But the people are here.
And the people are still hanging on the windows. Unbelievable. Enter X-ray.
You don't have to melt the steel for the building to come down. All you got to do is go to, let me pick a number, 800 degrees Fahrenheit.
How much temperature the person is able to withstand? And look at the picture and look at the time from the building heat and look at the time when you see the people on the windows. And then calculate where... how long these people are present to the collapse and to exit.
You only need the temperature to go to, let me pick a number, 800 degrees Fahrenheit in the center of a floor of the building in order to weaken the beams above that particular material.
The 800 degrees, no person is able to withhold. Just look at the people hanging from the windows all the time. And then look at the frame when you see the last person on the windows. Let's say 10 floors beneath that. And then calculate from that the time of the collapse. Enter X-ray.
If the center of a floor is experiencing high temperature, as you go out toward the perimeter of the floor and you go toward the window area, it's getting cooler and cooler. But still those people were sensing a hell of a lot of heat behind them.
100 degrees, talking that we have a 4 columns in the center of the building. Then we have a 4 columns at the corners of the building. Now, I've been there. My office over there at 77th floor. I know how it looks like. And then in the middle of it, you have a shaft. You have a... that you can go with the very high speed up and down. So basically, the room, and mine was 850 square feet room for $5,200, okay, rented, was actually next to the window. All of the rooms were next to the windows. So that part, based on the official story, was the part that was melted and collapsed. But you see the people in the windows. So calculate the distance.
A significant number of people could not tolerate the temperature, and rather than burn to death, they jumped. They would rather fall toward the ground rather than to stay there and burn. They were experiencing a lot of high temperature, and a significant number of people have jumped.
Dick, the boiling water is 100 degrees of centigrade. The person is able to hold 50 degrees of Celsius barely for the short period of time. Now, the egg boils at 60 degrees of centigrade, but yet you see the people hanging from the windows. All the time, almost. Till the collapse. Can you explain that? 800 degrees, and the room was what? 10 meters long? That was my room. And to exit.
When you're standing at the window outside the building, and air from the outside is blowing past you, you can be quite a bit cooler than if you were inside the building. Is that strange?
Simple law of dissipation of energy. You have something that appears to be not the hottest at the middle of it, but the hottest at the room that was surrounding the four columns, vertical columns. That was exactly in the middle of my room when I was there. That's supposed to be that place. Now, from that point, we have a 10 meters, then we have a 5 meters to the window. Now, you take 800 degrees, so the whole building could collapse in the shorter time than the pre-fall. It wasn't 9 seconds, it was shorter. At least, based on the information that I was able to gather. Let me drop.
Inside job.
I never said that. I have no right to make any claims. I don't make any claims. I'm asking. As much as I can express myself in English. That is my protection. So my question is, this was what the John was not willing to go through. I understand that. Because it's a horror. And for me it's a horror. I was having an office in that building. So when you see five floors below and you see the people for certain significant amount of time, 10 floors before, and then all of a sudden all of the structure pulverize, or let's say domino effect, but you cannot recognize the domino. But then she is showing another buildings that are actually stuck off the floors in controlled demolition. So, you know, there are plenty of questions that I have. And so it's here.
Forgetting Wesley's first point.
A floor that has the 800 degree temperature that's weakening a beam doesn't have to be the floor where people are standing at the window. They could be three floors, five floors below or above that spot.
Take, you have a 10 meter space, I was there, 10 meter space. Take the middle of it, that's the five, that's where you don't have the beams. Those are the floors. Based on an official story, those floors are supposed to collapse because of the melting. And now I have 5 meters to the window. We have 800 degrees temperature in the middle of that room. When you take the heat dissipation 5 meters to the window, and the person is standing in the window, why is the person standing on the end of the chair?
The beam that fails that allows the building to collapse is in the middle of the floor that's holding the concrete. Once the concrete and that beam starts sagging, and it starts pulling the outer wall toward the inner center beams that have the elevators going through them, you've got a failure. The building has vertical, very strong beams in the center. It's got vertical, very strong beams at the perimeter. My Roan 55 tower has that number from Roan because each vertical leg will support 55,000 pounds of vertical loading if and only if the tower is completely straight and each of the guy wires holds the tower completely straight up and down perpendicular to the ground. Everybody, let me drop. Using good common sense, most people think that the upper set of guy wires are the most important. Absolutely not. The middle and lower guy wires are the most important. If I get a failure of a middle or lower guy wire, and if the middle of the tower is allowed to tilt a little bit toward the north, the south, or the east and the west, and the whole tower is not vertical anymore, you get a complete collapse failure.
Justification, Jacob. You didn't answer the question. When you look at the people for the whole time, from the time of the heat to the time of collapse, how would you explain their presence when the building is melt to the point or weakened to the point in the very high temperature because it's a tremendous fire? You should see no people. It's a too high temperature, 800 degrees. So let's say at the window you have a 400 degrees. Answer the question. Do you agree or disagree to that?
I think I have a better question, Dick.
The floors that have the people and the floors that have the high temperature may not be the same floors. Go ahead, John.
Dick, that kind of steel will start to sag at 500 degrees. That's why it's fire coated. because of paper fires in the office and stuff like that, you know, 451, they got to protect it. Under that catastrophic effect, nothing was going to protect that steel. And you're right. As soon as they drooped or sagged, then the side clips pulled off the building. And that's what happened. But the number one question is, all right, forget the plane. What kind of a device was used to cause the dustification? It wasn't that spark transmitter. So what's the issue if it isn't the plane?
Okay, yeah. Make believe you were asked the question you just asked, John, and you tried to answer it. Tell me what answer you would give.
I support the aircraft did the damage, caused all of the problems. There was no secret machine. There was no HARP project. Nothing happened. Justification, if he wants to call it that, I believe was just a figment of their imagination due to what they saw in the film. We only got a couple of minutes left. But if he doesn't want the aircraft causing it, what did it? I don't have the answer.
Well, yes, I agree with that. Since we don't have the additional evidence, the only explanation is that two small planes hit the towers, and the towers completely collapsed, both of them, in very strange fashion. The first time in the world history we have such a collapse, and there is no other one. And to agree.
You said the word two small planes. Each one of those planes was around 300,000 or 400,000 pounds, moving at something like 500 miles an hour. The sheer weight and fuel on that airplane impacting that building, and those tanks being shattered by those beams it went through, and that fuel being sifted through that building where it starts off at 500 miles an hour moving horizontally, my goodness, can that do damage and scattering of flammable materials. Over to you, Wes.
Yes, you're right. Dr. Judy Wood took that to consideration, and she provided the calculation about the amount of fuel that was there and the damage and the potential energy that was converted to the kinetic energy because of that factor. What I would like you to look at, I'm not saying that I agree with her, is just look at what she presents and look at her video and look what you see, that's all. And to exist.
Okay, you had close to 100,000 pounds of fuel deposited into that building. Is she claiming, give me a couple of synopses. Is she claiming the building fell too fast and the building was too weak? And first of all, that building was a little bit of a disaster waiting to happen. That building was marginal in design as far as safety of human beings, as far as the fire escape mechanism, as far as the fire extinguishing mechanism. There's a hell of a lot of normal fire protection codes that were bypassed. The Port Authority was given all kinds of permissions they should never have been given to build that building the way they did. There was a lot of problems in that building. I'm a little bit amazed that it lasted this long without demonstrating some of those problems. I've talked to people who were in the building late at night on a windy night, and they described to me the sounds of the creaking steel that they heard in that building. Over to you, Wes, K2RIW.
Building 7.
Yeah, well, Dick, definitely you have a lot of merit in what you're saying. All I'm going to do is just send you the material. You view the material by yourself, and then you make your comments if you want to. My understanding is that she stated about the fact, and she asked you the questions. So I'm asking you the questions, that's all. And to share.
What's the major point that she's making? The building collapsed too fast, there was other terrorist actions going on, there was conspiracy. What is she trying to say? Is she trying to say the airplanes did not do that?
She was pointing at the fact that building collapsed based on her and all of the evidence that she was able to provide 2 seconds or 2.5 seconds faster than the free fall, which cannot happen. Because you have the opposite vectors of forces. So it could not happen. Then she made the point that the amount of fuel by calculating the thermal energy that was dissipated could not make complete collapse of two towers. Then she pointed the point that if a mile and a half away from at the FDR, there was a number of cars that were missing engines. Part of the paint was still remained, and the tires were intact. And she showed the pictures. And there's plenty of other evidence, and to XGM.
So are we saying that automobiles were damaged by the collapsing event a mile and a half away from ground zero? Is that what is apparently being claimed?
Well, there's plenty of evidence of that, that cars at the FDR, under the FDR, hundreds of cars were damaged. And they were very strangely damaged. Some of them, you had the evidence like they were cut with the razor blade, but not really cut. The part of the paint was like a razor blade cut untouched, and the other one was rusted. And she asked a question: what creates rustification at so fast period of time? Because the videos were made hours after the collapse. And to XGM.
KC2QIQ.
We've only got about 30 seconds left. This was TechNet number 1,400. We're up to something like 3,500 hours of TechNet over the last 30 years. Almost identical to the total number of hours that Johnny Carson was on the air in The Tonight Show. Ain't that crazy? Over to you, Glenn. K2RIW.
All your time really doing all this, but the debris field from everything falling down, it really covered a big difference, and the amount of corrosive material, God knows what it could have possibly done, but I don't think any of it's really a surprise. But 73 is all. K22QIQ, have a good one.
All of this stuff, and to your opinion, and to exit.
UPS Mobile.
Set tonight at 8:30 W2VL repeater system.
KB2YZ Mobile monitoring. Next tonight at 8:30, welcome to the W2VL repeater.
This is Kilowatt 6, David Peter Zebra, K6DPZ, Mobile. Listening, is anybody around? Anybody around? This is K6DTZ Mobile in Richmond Hill.
What do you need, Hal? WK2J.
WHV Mobile.
Next tonight at 8:30, this is the W2VL Amateur Radio Repeater System.
K6DTZ Mobile, Richmond Hill is listening. Anybody out there?
KC2IC, good morning.
KC2IC, K6DTZ, good morning. Beautiful day so far. I hope the weather stays this way. Go ahead.
Yeah, so far, so good for 8:26. It might be a hot one. Might be another day for the beach.
Yeah, it's nice and clear, I'll tell you. I'm very impressed. Yesterday was no bargain, and today she's nice and clear. We're just running a couple errands this morning. We'll get back and see what the SYL has planned.
Oh, very good, very good. All right, well, I heard you in there. Give one of these phone and radio.